Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is now time to see who the winning team is.
The first selection in the 2020 NHL Draft belongs to the New York Rangers.
You're listening to the Morning Show, Morning Drive, here on 102.5 The Game, live from Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson, and you just heard Commissioner Gary Bettman of the NHL calling out the New York Rangers as the winner of the NHL Draft Lottery. And joining us now to talk about that and the draft is Scott Wheeler of The Athletic. Scott, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So first off, I got to ask about the dramatic episode that this was last night with the music and the confirmation of the logos on the ball and the one ball that gets dropped was the Rangers ball, sparking conspiracy theories. What was your take on the overall presentation of the product last night?
I thought it was a lot of fun. It was hokey. It was kitschy. It was kind of overdone. But it was still a lot of fun. We knew that it was going to be hokey. We knew that they had 30 minutes of airtime to fill for what was essentially a one-minute exercise. And I thought they pulled it off nicely. I thought the music was funny. I thought the way that it all kind of played out with Gary Bettman confirming the logos of the teams in his leagues was a little funny. So it was good. It was all fun and games. I thought the moment was exactly what the NHL was probably hoping it would be, which is tense and exciting and thrilling for one team and disappointing for the rest. And certainly Twitter and sort of social media was buzzing about it. So I think that's a win-win-win for the NHL.
And luckily for, I guess, a lot of these teams, a lot of fans, that it didn't go to Pittsburgh, it didn't go to Edmonton, it didn't go to Toronto. I think those are the three that folks were looking at of, please don't let it go there. But at least Lafreniere is going to go to a team that's in a big market, loaded with talent. And so there's some excitement, I'm sure, around that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the player can often get lost in this entire sort of lottery process. These are kids, and there's a lot at stake for them. And him getting to go to a team that's already on the sort of come up and already on the outside of their sort of looking in the rearview mirror, if you will, back at their rebuild, it is big for him. He could have gone to a team like Detroit or a team like Ottawa or even one of the California teams, whether that's in Anaheim or in L.A., where they're still 2, 3, 4 years away from getting to where the New York Rangers are right now, essentially. And that is as maybe not a contending for a Stanley Cup level of a team, but certainly a playoff team, a team that is built around a ton of talent, a young team, and a team that already has a lot of this sort of foundational pieces in place that you need to become a Stanley Cup contender long term. So it's got to be a very, very happy day for Alexis Lafreniere. He's going to have a big day, obviously, in October when it finally gets announced. But it's basically a foregone conclusion at this point. He's going to go to the Rangers. They're going to take him. There's not going to be any funny business, I don't think. So it's a big, big day for him and a big, big day for an original six franchise that has not sort of fallen on hard times in recent years, but hasn't been the New York Rangers that we're used to seeing, the sort of contending team that they were in the early 2010s and late 2000s. So they need to get back there. It's good for the league for them to get back there. I'm sure they will be all over the national broadcast schedule next year now that they have Alexi. So it's a good thing for basically everyone involved as far as I'm concerned.
See, Justin, you talked about those three teams and conspiracy theories, but I immediately thought of Patrick Ewing and the New York Knicks when the ball came. I'm like, what, did that come out of the freezer? How does that work? But I think certainly good for the NHL. Scott, you wrote a piece with 10 thoughts about this, and one of your thoughts was apologies to the Predators. You wrote that of the 8 teams that could have won the lottery, the Preds were probably the team with the strongest need for a player like Lafreniere. Explain that and I guess just how you look at where the Preds stand right now.
Yeah, I was kind of quietly pulling for the Predators. I think I was on Team Chaos. I think it would have been a lot of fun if Toronto or Edmonton or the Pittsburgh Penguins head of one. I think that just the sort of disappointment and the outrage would have made for even greater television than it already was. But if it wasn't going to be one of those three teams and it was going to be one of the other five, I think the Predators were it's hard to say deserving with something like this, but they were the team that certainly could use a player like Alexi Lafreniere, maybe more than the rest. You look at the teams that were all available, and they're all loaded with talent up front. They've all got the Mark Scheifele's of the world, and the Artemi Panarins, and the Sidney Crosby's, and the Austin Matthews, and the Alexander Barkovs in Florida, and even Jonathan Huberdeau in Florida, and all of that is sort of already at play for those teams. They have star power up front, and I think when you look at this Nashville Predators team, as good as Matt Duchene is, as good as Philip Tomasino will be for them, I believe, as their sort of de facto top prospect right now, as good as Philip Forsberg is, they aren't that level of player. They aren't true sort of superstar level talents, the kind of players who can be number one players on a Stanley Cup winning team. So Alexi kind of fit in Nashville maybe more than he did in other organizations, just because he would have been their go-to guy almost immediately. He would have instantly become one of their most talented forwards. And he was the kind of forward piece for a team that has typically built around its defense that could have really pushed the needle and moved the needle for them and moved them in the right direction over the next 2, 3, 4 years. So, it would have been a huge day for the Nashville Predators. I think it would have been a huge day for the sort of history of the organization all told if they had have landed Alexi. So I think they're probably the team that can probably be more disappointed than maybe the rest can.
Again, Scott Wheeler, The Athletic, join us to talk NHL draft, NHL draft lottery. And picking 11th isn't necessarily all bad because the type of draft this is, there's some good deep talent there. And looking at some projections already in rankings, and Corey Pronman said at number 11, Jack Quinn, who's a right wing. And then we've seen some other ones say possibly Seth Jarvis, who's a center. Some people wanting Askarov, the goaltender as well. What do you think is going to be a great fit for the Predators and the system that they have now and what they truly do need to keep their window slightly open over the next few years?
I still think a forward makes the most sense at number 11. I believe that this draft is 8 sort of top-end players deep. I'd be surprised if any of those players, 7 of which are forwards, are still available at 11. But it's not completely out of the question that one of those players drops. Every year we seem to have forwards that drop as teams inevitably take defensemen near the top of the draft. And this year in particular is really interesting because there aren't very many high-end defensemen. There's really only 2 defensemen at the top of the draft. And I think if you see 3 or 4 defensemen go in that top 10, like you typically do see in an average draft year, then suddenly one of those forwards that's really high on my board could begin to slip. So I think Jack Quinn it could be a player there for them if those forwards that I sort of hinted at aren't available. And I think, you hit the nail on the head with players like Seth Jarvis and Jack Quinn. I think that's the good fit there. Even after taking Tomasino a year ago and sort of beginning to rebuild the strength of the prospect pool as forward, I still think you can go back to that well this year. I still think that's the right play, overtaking a defenseman or overtaking Yaroslav Askarov. I think between Connor Ingram and UC Saros that they've got a good thing going in net. I'm really, really a big fan of Connor Ingram and his potential to be an NHL goalie and maybe even a starting NHL goalie. So there are options there for them in net, and I don't think they have to be one of the teams that takes the plunge on Askarov, as good as he is as a goalie prospect and as legitimate as he is as a goalie prospect. So I think they probably go forward there, and that means if you're lucky, you're looking at one of those 7 big forwards that I hinted at. And if not, I think players like Jack Quinn and Seth Jarvis and Dylan Holloway and some of the other top forwards in the draft make some sense.
And before we have to let you go, we're still tracking the PK Subban trade because a draft pick in this draft for the Predators still comes from that. I mean, last season they had 2 in the second round thanks to that, where they got Igor Afanasyev. And then this year they have 2 second round picks as well, and then 2 third round picks because of the Fiala trade too. So looking at this and loading up, trying to fill that cupboard up as well, how much of an impact does it make in this organization to have those 2 seconds and those 2 thirds, especially looking at years to come and what that could potentially mean, not just for the team, but for maybe even trade assets down the road?
I think that's big. I think when you're a team like the Predators and you've been a sort of playoff team for going on a decade now and a borderline contending team for much of that, I think it's not very often that you see a team that has that kind of depth in terms of picks in a single class, particularly picks in this sort of rounds 2 and 3. So the fact that they're still a playoff team, they've still got a lot of pieces to build around, they're still in sort of win now mode, and that they're also now able to sort of begin at least to rebuild that prospect pool and insulate that prospect pool, it'll be huge for them. This draft, I would say, is about 40 or 50 players deep in terms of the kind of prospects that I think have the potential to be real sort of everyday NHL players. And of those 40 to 50 players, many of them are often available into the later rounds, into the fourth round, into the fifth round on my board. The draft doesn't play out exactly like my board plays out. So there's going to be potential, I think, in rounds two or three to get some really good players. It's a very, I kind of hinted at this earlier, but it's a very forward-heavy draft. So I think if they're looking at forwards in this draft, there could be some home run swings that are worth taking. It just is a very light draft on defense, and there's probably only 10 or 15 defensemen that are in that 40 or 50 players that I talked about. So if you're willing to take 2, 3, 4 forwards with your top picks, I think you could end up getting some future options for yourself as sort of top 9 players, and that'll be big for them as they enter into their next phase here, and they need that young sort of entry-level depth that can give you offense on a cheap contract. So if they can hit with those picks, it'll be a big weekend for them for sure.
No, absolutely. I'm looking forward to the NHL draft in October. Going to be interesting. Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate your insight.
Yep, no sweat. Anytime, guys.
Scott Wheeler, The Athletic. Great insight there on the NHL draft, which will be in October. Very, very weird to say that. Usually it's the end of June, but October for the NHL draft, Joe.
So take note, NFL. You can have a July draft.
Be flexible. Okay, up next, we are going to continue on with this. There's some, looks like, breaking news coming out again in the college football landscape. We're going to talk about that. Up next, Morning Drive, Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad. And Nashville SC is back. Finally, they are back. Nashville SC will face FC Dallas this Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. You can catch all of the action here on 102.5 The Game or ESPN 94.9, beginning with pregame coverage at 7:15. Good to have them back, Joe. Good to have it back.
Absolutely. It stinks for Nashville and for Tennessee that the Predators crapped out in a week. Nashville SC, there is a void. Fill the void. There's no preseason football. Fill the void.
Fill the void. Okay, breaking news coming out of college football. UMass has canceled its fall football season. They're the 27th FBS football program of 130 that will not play this fall. So UMass, another domino falling there. And then apparently, Joe, you can see it over my head better than I can see it about the Big Ten having another meeting. What's going on there?
Yeah, so on ESPN, and I think various reporters are on this, but the presidents are meeting in about 12 minutes. And this will apparently be possibly a cancellation, could also be a delay, and ESPN reporting to September 26th, which is interesting because, and honestly, I thought the Big Ten had a better plan than the SEC to go early and build in extra weeks for when you need to, you know, whatever may happen, you need extra weeks, you've got extra weeks. So now they might end up just doing the SEC plan, which is to start, you know, in late September, which is kind of funny if it turned out that way and they actually played. So that's a possibility, apparently, is to go back again. What will be different? Because I agree with people that are like, wait a minute, you just put out all these schedules and now you're canceling it. What changed? Well, to me, it wasn't what changed. It's just at some point they were kicking the can to this inevitable decision. But if you are delaying it to then, what can change between now and September 26th? I don't think it's realistic to think that all of a sudden the virus in this country is going to nosedive, right? I don't think that's realistic. So could it be some kind of conversation that we've been talking about a lot on this show today? Could it be, okay, we have time now to get together with players.
They had time before.
Oh, I know. No, listen.
I know we're on the same page.
I'm not making excuses for them. I'm just trying to understand what they would be using with this extra built-in time. I mean, if you're not doing that, like, okay, let's figure this out, and let's talk about things honestly here.
Finally.
Let's talk about things honestly, which safety, sure. Of course, you want player safety. But what is really worrying presidents of universities? So if there can be an honest discussion and some sort of inclusion of players as a stakeholder, which really isn't the case in college athletics, all due respect to advisory committees, they have input. They are asked for their input. I don't know how much it really impacts things. I think on some things there's probably some impact. But I'm talking about actually saying, no, 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 we want this. You want this? No, no, we want this. You want that? Okay, then we want this. It's a negotiation. It's
what
not.
What is this, Congress?
Okay. Yeah, it can't be like a true labor negotiation because, my goodness, everybody in college athletics is terrified of that word being applied to student athletes. But if you want this to carry forward, I think it has to be something along those lines.
If they come out and say that this will give us more time to talk, I may lose it. I may lose it. Yeah, all this time that they've had to talk over the summer, you have the student athletes already returning to campus. You couldn't have talked then. You couldn't have talked in July. You couldn't have talked in June. You couldn't have talked in May, April. All this has been going on since March, and you knew then we had to cancel the NCAA basketball tournament. That, hey, this could affect college football because it is a sport when fans are present, where tens of thousands and even 100,000 people are there. You have hundreds of athletes being around the same area, plus staff and coaches and everything, plus vendors, concessions, everything being in a stadium area. And now is when it's all coming to a talking point on this, when they've had so much time to discuss, so much time to put together different plans, so much time to discuss with other conferences, hey, what are you guys doing? Hey, what are you doing? Now you have individual schools making decisions independent of their conference in a lot of ways too. Where is the leadership?
Yeah.
Where is the leadership to come together on making a decision that you feel is the best overall? You have to come to a decision on these topics, and that is what's so frustrating, just as a college football fan, to see how there's so much lack of leadership. And it's like, how did you even get in these positions if you cannot come together on this? Yes, it's a weird time overall for the country. It is a weird time. But you've had time to discuss these issues. They've had time to look at these things and to discuss with players, with coaches, with athletic directors, with medical professionals, with presidents, with everyone from all over the college football community. And it's midway through August, and camps are taking place. And it's, we should probably have a serious discussion on this.
Right. And then it's also, it could be, we're going to cancel. Thank you for all your workouts this summer and for being very careful and for getting tested and for making sure that you are free of COVID so that you can participate. But no, season's over. And then the players say, okay, so what's next? Well, maybe we could like play in the spring, I guess. I mean, Brian Kelly said that he has seen an ACC plan for the spring, the Notre Dame coach. So apparently they have done some kind of look ahead, and he said he likes the plan. Okay, maybe there are plans like that in other leagues we just haven't heard about, but you better be able to tell these players a pretty detailed explanation and plan if you're going to cancel this. And you're right, there's a total lack of leadership. Now, I've heard, Justin, the idea of college football could use a commissioner. I do agree that it could, and that a lot of issues with college football would be aided by that, by having someone who has some kind of jurisdiction over the conferences. The problem, though, again, is the presidents of the universities are going to tell the college football commissioner to go sit in the corner and shut up because I'm a president of the university. And that's the whole dynamic here. I mean, I'm texting back and forth with my wife's uncle about this, and he was like, well, wouldn't the NCAA – if the Big Ten cancels, you know, would the NCAA like force the SEC to follow suit? And I'm like, they don't have that power. You know, the NCAA, NCAA in this whole thing has been like, hey, thoughts and prayers, everyone. I'll keep fighting against name, image, likeness rights, though. I mean, it's, you know, so the presidents are making this call. And again, it's like, one, the leadership vacuum, two, the lack of collective discussion. I'm sure there are people in different conferences that have talked to each other. Conference commissioners have talked to each other. Some. But again, if the Big Ten does something like goes conference only and it totally blindsides SEC leadership, what does that tell you? If you got Nebraska now, their football coach out saying, we're going to go to whatever league we can play in to play football, and their president apparently is not voting for cancellation,
right?
What does that tell you? It's just, it's all fractured and it's a mess. And if you are buying that time, man, you better make use of it. Other than, guys, hope something good happens. Maybe something good will happen.
Wait. Did you sell shoes or buy shoes? Did somebody give you shoes? Ah.
Yeah, exactly. You, yeah. Did you just go to a card show? And it's,
where was your autograph again?
Yeah.
All that.
The Johnny Manziel is the best example of that whole thing. And I know it doesn't matter for him because he comes from like a rich oil family, but like Texas A&M built a huge facility to house his Heisman to recruit. I mean, it's just this huge thing for the school for him to win this Heisman. And then they're out. He's just getting chased down by like the FBI for signing right. some autograph, signing some posters. I mean, this is the type of crap that the NCAA worries itself with to preserve amateurism.
Yeah, we're a little fired up.
I mean, it's just, again, that part of it is why a lot of people, including us, who love college football, are on the verge of getting no college football this fall because they couldn't say, you know what, like Mike Gold said, these people are different. They are not just some students at our school. We all know this already. We know this. Let's do this, 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 bubble them up, get whatever we need as assurances, if you can get legal assurances, mm-hmm. and play. But no, they're students, amateurism, et cetera, it doesn't work.
They need a voice. They need a voice. Okay, switching back to hockey, Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, is going to join us next, talk more about the draft, what happened in the playoffs, what could be next for the Nashville Predators. Up next, Morning Drive, Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad. We've covered a variety of topics today, Joe.
It has been, yes, a potpourri of a day.
Ooh, what a word. No wonder you're a sports journalist.
And you don't say the T in potpourri. It's like Lafreniere. You don't say Lafreniere.
Oh, you have learned. You have learned. I'm so proud of you.
So now I can talk Rangers hockey,
You can talk Rangers.
That could have been Predators hockey.
No, what about the Russian forward that's a prospect for the Predators?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you got to put it in front of me because I couldn't even remember it.
Okay,
I think that's doable. Say it again.
Yegor Afanasyev.
I think that's one of those things.
Do that one,
yeah. Like Russian names, I think once you actually can read all the consonants as they go together,
right?
You can figure those out pretty well. Like I had no problem with any of the Russian five. Of our shared youth. I mean,
yes.
You grew up loving the Russian five.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's the French names are a little more.
So remember that
a more challenging.
The R and the French names.
Yeah, just the R is silent. Yeah.
And Finnish can be a little interesting as well.
Well, that's a world of. I mean, no one else says Grand Roo?
Mikhail Glenland.
No, that's right. It's the R is
R
an
roll.
L.
The little R, the little roll. Yeah, the
Mikhail
R.
Glenland.
And actually, because I talk to folks on Twitter about these Finnish names because I try to get it right. And it's Jussa Saros.
Yeah, Jussa. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have the double U's in there, and then there's a lot of rolled R's in Finnish, which make people think, well, it sounds too Italian. Like, I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Like, it's supposed to be Pecorine.
There's only so much you can do with with language, right?
There is.
It's Rine?
Pecorine.
Rine, yeah. See, that's even cooler. See, now I feel better about saying Saros instead of Saros, though, which is
right.
Pete Weber says Saros.
That's what he says,
like,
yeah. I will never question Pete Weber.
Yeah, you can't
Weber.
Question
I'm not
Pete.
Going to.
Can't question Pete.
No. He does his thing, and I respect him for that, and I will never question him.
The legend.
He's a legend. He's a goat.
He is. He's goated.
He's definitely been goated. So, college football. Before we have to leave.
Yeah, I mean, this is minute by minute, right?
Before Darren, Donick, and Chase take over at 10 a.m. I mean, there's so many different things going on. Ohio State's still practicing, but you have UMass that is canceling their season. So, 27 schools now. And the FBS have canceled. Big Ten is meeting currently, right?
Big Ten presidents are reportedly meeting right now. Actually, Twitter's pretty funny right now. It's just a bunch of people saying, come on, give me a detail.
Pretty much.
And what did the president, what's his name, from Iowa say?
Then John Wilner reporting from a source that the Pac-12 is on course to cancel regardless of Big Ten decision. And source two for him, CEOs have leaned into medical advice since pandemic began, and I see them doing that today. So we're coming out of the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Whew, and the SEC is like, no.
Yeah, and the SEC and ACC. Could you have SEC, ACC only football this fall? Big 12 seems like the middle ground conference right now.
They are kind of in the middle.
They are.
Geographically, too.
They could take – Nebraska and Iowa could just come on down. I mean, we're also old enough to remember when Nebraska-Oklahoma used to be one of the three or four games you look forward to every year. That's one of the sad developments of expansion and realignment. So, hey, get Nebraska, Oklahoma back. I don't know.
I still look back to Nebraska, Michigan, 97, and claiming the national championships.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Nebraska was the right choice. Though,
I knew that was coming from you. I knew it was going to come.
And see, now you're going to bring up a season in which there's a little bit of a Heisman controversy, too, in this state. We might have to go there.
I do not feel like getting hate tweets today.
Last segment, you just get a flood of hate tweets coming in.
Yeah, we just run out with a pitchfork of fire. Come and get me. But we're seeing so much. Well, it's interesting, too. SEC, ACC, national championships coming from both of those conferences, right? Where they're just like, oh, maybe we want to continue on with that trend.
See, that's the fascinating thing is if you actually did have, half of the Power Five or three-fifths of the Power Five going, what does that mean, just in the football sense, what does that mean for a playoff? Playoff just goes on. It's like, sorry, Big Ten, Pac-12. You guys can just play a Rose Bowl in May if you want. Have your old granddaddy of them all in the summer in Pasadena, and meanwhile, we're deciding a national exchange. I don't know.
Boy, it'd just be great.
I don't think that would be well received.
No. It'd be great if there was some, leadership.
That would be nice.
To help with that.
That would be nice. But we're way past that point. We're at the point of, it's these various leaders are going to decide for themselves or decide for their leagues or in some cases decide for their schools. This is a point Stuart Mandel's making on Twitter. It's a great point. All the people who have been dealing with this, trying to come up with plans, maybe not doing enough to come up with plans, but it's been the ADs and it's been the commissioners, right? They are really the people involved in this process. They are the people when reporters report things, when Nicole and Adam and Thamel and 40 and everyone – they're going to the same people. It's ADs, it's commissioners. Mm-hmm. They are out now. They're just like everybody else. Like, what are the presidents saying? That's the crazy thing that people don't – like, people think the NCAA can just be like, no, you play or you don't play. No, they got nothing to say about this. These presidents are sitting in a room, and those people who really are the ones doing all this and saying everything are just like us right now, wondering what's happening in that room.
And just keeping an eye on Twitter and the TV.
Yeah.
See what's going to come out next. Because we know in the next hour something new is going to happen.
I mean, maybe some of them have like at least texting relationships with some of the presidents, so they're getting a little bit leaked out to them.
A little bit.
But it's the presidents of the universities, and it's just the whole thing, along with the ridiculousness of amateurism, which is part of this, is heading toward probably an outcome that people won't like.
And we've talked about this the entire show to bring it all together, too, that Auerbach put out an article as well, that one thing to keep in mind as ADs and presidents make decisions to postpone fall sports is the non-football sports. So the Old Dominion AD brought up how field hockey was down to 6 games to play. Soccer was down to 8 or 9. It just doesn't feel good to have a season when you're down to that many games. So it's affecting so many other things as well when conferences are deciding not to play, which means it's affecting those students, affecting those coaches, affecting those staffs, affecting scholarships, affecting everything else. That this is just so big that it isn't – I know we focus on college football, but it's just more than college football. There's so many lives being impacted by this, and where I just, again, will say, I hope the universities come, if they have to cancel things, and that the schools that already have, they come to a way to support those that are suffering from this, that whether it's their income not coming in, they're not able to, people that are losing their jobs because of it, people that are suffering economically. I mean, you look at it in just in the media landscape. Yeah, how many play-by-play folks, color folks, they're going to be their stats keepers. All these people that depend on these jobs to happen aren't going to happen either. So I just feel for everybody there and have to understand how big of a picture we have to look at for this.
These opportunities allow college athletics to be a nonprofit.
Right.
Okay? That's why they are provided largely, but they are still opportunities. A lot of kids get, coaches devote their lives to this. They don't make a lot of money. Administrators who don't make a lot of money in this, a lot of people are in peril right now.
Well, up next, folks, is Darren, Donick, and Chase. Make sure you listen to them from 10 to 2, followed by Jared and the GM. So big thanks for tuning in today. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin B. Bradford. He's at Joe Rexroad. Thanks to Marquise Munson for taking care of us. This has been The Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.